What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Numbers, where we get into the stories beyond the stats. And as always, I am Ben, and this is Will.
You're.
All right, so today, on this fantastic Wednesday, we are going to talk, starting off, about the World Series. Now, in my opinion, we've discovered that Shohei Ohtani is human. However, moving along, sir, how do you feel about your Dodgers?
Oh, okay. I'm going to say that I don't feel too bad about them.
All right.
The Dodgers, it wasn't a bad game by the Dodgers. It's just the Blue Jays did what they keep doing to teams. You can't really go up against a team that does runs in bunches. If you can't stop them from getting those runs in bunches, then you can't stop them. And that's all it is. And like I told you at the beginning of this, it's going to be scary for the Dodgers going into this World Series. It is. They're going to have to really fight to keep the Blue Jays from demolishing them. In every game, that's pretty much how it's going to have to go. Shohei Ohtani, he is human. Let's be clear. He had that great game during the playoffs, but regular season pitching, it left a lot to be desired.
Do you think that's
the only reason his ERA stayed so low is because he only pitched for like one or two, maybe three innings. And then once they actually put him through a full game, he let up some runs in that game.
And that's what I was going to ask you was, do you think that it's a lot of this boils down to the fact that he did not pitch for so long into the season? That he was, in theory, behind target for what he would have needed to be fully warmed up coming into the postseason.
Like I said, he's human. Nobody thought that he was, like, you know, infallible. He's had some major mess-ups. Shohei Ohtani's had some games where he done went 0-for-5 this season.
Absolutely.
It happens. The problem comes in. Nobody actually looks at the Dodgers from a different perspective. They're not, even though they are offensive giants, they haven't been offensively dominant all season. The Blue Jays, on the other hand, their defense, horrible. No question about it. But their offense, they are gunners. Plain and simple. If you leave a hole, they're going to attack it, and they're going to spread it wide open. That's all that there is to it. And the Dodgers, they're going to have to keep their defense as tight as possible. And let's be clear, that's going to be a rough time against this Blue Jays team. This Blue Jays team has shown all season why you can't give them a break at all.
I agree.
So I feel about my Dodgers 2-2. We're still sitting good. It's probably going to go into game 7.
I agree. I think it's going to be a crazy game 7 at that. The thing I think too is like, you know, game 4 was a phenomenal game. Actually, every game has been a phenomenal game. They had a game go to 18 innings, sir. That's insanity.
Yes. This is literally going to be one of those series where you can't actually sleep on it. This is going to be one of those series where either team, first off, deserves it. Both teams in the World Series right now, neither one had a horrible season. Neither one had one of those, oh, well, they got lucky and got a ride here. None of that happened.
Agreed.
You got two teams that grinded it out, and both, one of them has defense and pitching, the other one has offensive giants. And I'm talking about the Blue Jays when I say offensive.
I'm with you. Vladdy is, and everybody else on that, Bo. I mean, you can name them all off, and you're talking about a team that at any turn not too different than the Dodgers really offensively. Anyone in that lineup has the ability to go yard or put ball to bat and or bat to ball and get some RBI. Like, this is one of those teams that I think out of everybody coming into this, any of their possible opponents, I think the Blue Jays are the scariest ones to have to face, and for a good reason, and they've proven it. And yes, they've lost two games, but they've won two. I mean, Yamamoto had his second complete game of the postseason this year. That's Yamamoto might just be your best pitcher. I'm just saying. But
there is no Mike, sir. I told you that a long time ago.
I agree. Yamamoto is, I think more people were sleeping on him, and I think he's silenced those doubters.
Technically, Kershaw is our best pitcher. But if you want to be the one that's here, the one that's going to be here for a while, Yamamoto is our best pitcher. There's no doubt about it. The man is a beast when it comes to pitching.
He is scary. He is scary good.
And when we want to talk about how the Dodgers can win, plain and simple, every single time, put the bat to the ball.
Yep.
That's all it's going to take. You're going to have to outrun the Blue Jays. You can't just keep the defense tight. You have to outrun the Blue Jays. And no, it's not easy. It's not going to be easy, especially for this Dodgers team, because they haven't been able to outrun anybody. They've been able to stave off everybody.
Let's be clear. The only game that actually, even though, yes, the Dodgers won game three, game two was the only game, which, again, Yamamoto, full game, they won 5-1. The only reason that they won that game was because of Yamamoto. They put up the average number of points that they're putting up, and they won 5-1. Every other game has been either a Toronto dominant performance, or in like game three, it was 6-5. They barely held that game off.
Once again, they've been able to stave off opponents, sir. They haven't been able to outrun them.
That's going to be a problem coming into game five. And here's my concern for the Dodgers. Snell versus Yusevaj. And I honestly hate that I'm going to say this, but I don't think Snell is a good enough pitcher to be doing this.
Oh, wait. I'm going to tell you, Snell, he had his bad game. That's how every time Snell's in the series, he'll go 1-2 perfect series, and then he'll have that one where he just can't get anything to go right. But then he'll come back to it. So with this game tonight, there's no reason to think that Snell won't at least keep it close.
Okay.
He'll at least perform at what we need. So the only question is, will our backups be able to keep everything in line after he comes out? Because he's only going to last about six innings. He'll be at about 80, 85 pitches, and then they'll finally sit him. So it's going to be about four innings where the backups are going to have to show why they're getting paid.
And unless the Dodgers take off to a big lead early. Which you can. By no means am I going to say that you can't. But unless you guys do it and you guys can contain Toronto at that same point, this will be a Toronto win. Because...
And I would like to say, Yesevaj is not their best pitcher.
He's not.
You can argue that he's like their second worst. But because Shane Bieber's pretty bad as well. But Yesevaj had a nice game the last time. I don't think he's going to have that. I think we're going to see a complete turnaround on the pitching in this game.
His ERA is concerning for sure at a 4.26 versus Snell's 2.42.
Exactly.
But
Snell, like I said, Snell will let up some runs. I don't know why everybody thought that he couldn't, just because he's had a good postseason. He's done this all year. If you actually watch the Dodgers, you see exactly what I'm talking about. That he has those games where the umps aren't going his way, his pitches aren't going the way that he wants them. It just happens. And he has those games where he'll let up about 4 or 5 runs, and that's exactly what happened.
I'm with you. I think the Dodgers have a very good chance of winning, but unfortunately, so do the Blue Jays. And they've proven that they're right there. They're neck and neck. The record reflects it. And in some ways, you know, if it were certain other teams, I would say, okay, you know, the Dodgers got to let off a couple of games. You know, they got to, there's going to be that game here and there, you know, and especially in a 7-game series. Like, you know, they might think, all right, look, we're going to take it to 7. Like, we know we're going to have a couple of rough games. Pitching may not be lined up right, whatever. But, like, if this was anyone else, I think out of all of the possible contenders that would have been in that were in the postseason, I think that the Blue Jays are the only team that I see that I would have said, okay, like, this is a 50-50 coming into this. There is no guarantee one way or the other.
There's no guarantee, but there is a nice expectation. You know, the Dodgers should still take this series. There's no reason why they shouldn't, other than the fact that the Blue Jays can put up a lot of runs at once. But how many times do you think the Dodgers are going to let that happen? Like I said, defensively, they're well sound. That, no doubt about it. They can have their off games, but what do you think the Dodgers are going to do for this next game? Think they're going to let them run all over them? I don't think so. And you may say that I'm biased because I'm a fan, but I don't see the same mistakes happening twice with the Dodgers. See what I'm saying?
Well, my only thing is, yes, I don't think they're going to necessarily let the same mistakes happen per se, but this isn't a team that they're playing where it's just letting mistakes happen. These are competitors that are just as capable of winning. So even if
they're hungry,
perform flawlessly, essentially, they could go pretty much scoreless, or they could blow it out, and they could both just light it up. So mistakes aside,
go ahead.
Mistakes aside, they could both have a perfect side. Both of them could have perfect games, really. And it could be either low scoring or high scoring, and it's not going to necessarily be about controlling all of the mistakes. It's who's going to make the mistake in the end. That is the thing. I think going into a game 5 where it's 2-2 on the records for both teams, you're at this point, you're like, okay, we know what we're dealing with. But we're not, the Dodgers aren't cakewalking like they did last year on the Yankees. The Yankees were just terrible, right? They didn't have to clean up all their mistakes because the Yankees just continue to make consistent mistakes. The Blue Jays are not. They're not constantly making the same mistakes and having the same performances. This is a team that is competing with the champs, and they are competing to take that championship away. They're wanting to take the repeat away. So if the Dodgers play flawlessly and the Blue Jays play even nearly flawlessly, there's no way to say until we get towards the end of the game, really the likelihood of what's going to happen. The only way that the Blue Jays are going to have a guaranteed L here, and I wouldn't say this is the same application for the Dodgers because we're talking about the Dodgers, but for the Blue Jays, the only way this is a guaranteed L is if they get down pretty far, because they do struggle once they're down to get the momentum to come back. That's not what they do real well with. So,
okay, so based off of what you just said, both teams would have to play flawlessly, and you would never be able to tell. I could tell you which one would win if they both play flawlessly. Who's better at their A game?
That's tough. That's real tough.
No. The Dodgers at their A game are the best. That's hands down, and that's not a fan talking. Hands down, there's no, at the Dodgers at their A game with everybody hitting the way that they're supposed to and the pitcher pitching the way that they're supposed to. Who has better pitchers than us?
I don't know. I'm not like, saying that it wouldn't go.
Who has better hitters? Paper,
but I'm saying that the Blue Jays will capitalize not on mistakes, but they will capitalize on their own successes. And they are good at driving in runs. And we're not talking just one at a time. They can put people on bases, and then they can get it in. Their lineup is maybe even more suited for that than the Dodgers. The Dodgers have these guys that are hitting the ball. They're going yard, or they're trying to go yard. So they're getting sometimes guys loaded up on bases. If everyone's playing flawlessly, the difference is going to be who's going to load the bases versus who's going to go yard. I would almost dare say I would rather take the chance on the Blue Jays because they're going to load the bases and then somebody's going to come up that's just going to smack it. Whether it's out of the park or whether it's an infield hit, they're going to drive runs in more, I feel like, than the Dodgers because the Dodgers have to get the right lineup to get people on base. Otherwise, they're just scoring one, maybe two at a time. That's the thing. The Dodgers are great at scoring. But like you said, their average is in that 4-6 range, and it's showing right here in the postseason and in the World Series. The Blue Jays, if they have it and they're playing perfectly, they're going to get two, maybe even load the bases. And then somebody is going to come up, be it, you know, Vladdy, and he's going to knock that ball, be it Bo. Whoever you want to say, they're going to come up, they're going to hit the ball, and it's going to go. Whether it goes the distance or whether it's an infield drop and it still turns into two or three runs, you're talking about a team that will load the bases a little bit more effectively. And it's not a mistake, but it's their style a little more effectively than the Dodgers. That's the thing. The Dodgers, if they play perfectly, they're getting runs in, but they're doing it one at a time. They're not doing two and three at a time. They're getting one at a time, maybe two, depending on their lineup. That's the difference between both perfect games. If both teams are clicking offensively, the pitching ultimately clearly doesn't matter at that point because they're both clicking and therefore they're both getting runs. And if that's what's happening, then in that particular case, I would say let's talk about the team who led the league in RBI, who led the league in loading the bases. And that is the Blue Jays. And that is where, again, the Dodgers have to stop them. They can't let them get up big or they can't let them load these bases because when they do and it's perfect, then the Blue Jays are going to put up runs in each inning in abundance. Not just one, not just two. We're talking 3, 4, 5. The Dodgers have already found that out.
I agree. But once again, I would never take the Blue Jays at their A game over the Dodgers at theirs. It just wouldn't happen. I don't care how many runs they put up. I can guarantee you if everybody on the... I'm looking at it from player to player, but I'm also looking at it as even if you walk Ohtani, Mookie Betts is the threat. Even if you walk Freddie, Tay Oscar is the threat.
Why would you walk him? If they're hitting and you're giving up one or two runs an inning, because you're going to get...
No, I'm saying, this is what I'm saying. So if Shohei Ohtani's playing a game, it's either a homer or a hit. No questions asked. Now he's stealing bases. Okay, let's go to Mookie. Mookie's good for a double at the very least this season. So, double. Now Ohtani's in. Now we got Freddie. You're going to probably walk Freddie because Freddie Freeman just hit that game-winning homer.
He going yard.
Now we got Tay Oscar coming. Okay, you got past the starting four, the Furious Four. What are you about to do with Muncy? What are you about to do with Edmund? I get it. The Blue Jays can put together runs like crazy. But when we're talking about these players at their A game, there's a person that will outdo each person on the Blue Jays that are on the Dodgers. Your comparison just isn't, it doesn't match up.
It does, and here's why. If everybody's hitting and you got more guys that are hitting and going yard, okay, here's the thing, right? We obviously, you can't have everybody hitting 100%. For one, it's not really...
I wasn't trying to be unrealistic. I'm saying regardless.
Right. You're talking about a team. Let's say a perfect game is when you're hitting you're getting more hits than you're not, right? So yeah, you're going to have a strikeout. You're going to have a pop fly here and there. So that's how you're going to have innings change. So if outside of those just random inning changing plays, both teams are producing. Now, this would be a perfect world type of situation where, you know, things would just be insane. But you're talking about, you're hoping that your guys, you got a couple that are going to get some big plays. And then after that, you're hoping that the rest of the lineup will get on base and be ready for that next rotation. Otherwise, you're just getting one run at a time. The Blue Jays lineup is set in a way that you're not getting a home run every single time. You're getting hits, two, three guys at a time that are lining up on base, and we're getting a loaded bases situation, and then you got a hitter. You got somebody in that lineup who's going to suddenly pop up and be like, "I," and then they're grand slamming that sucker, or they're dropping that in the just on the warning track, and you got two, three guys getting in.
That's the problem, you're looking at it
from these players doing this in a player-to-player situation. The Blue Jays aren't doing super player to super player. They're doing great guys that are getting on base, doing their job, and then you got the guy who's driving them in.
That's what I'm saying. What you didn't hear, first off, I didn't say anything about everybody getting a hit. You walked Ohtani. Mookie was the only one that actually got a hit. I mean, Mookie and Ohtani were the only ones that actually got a hit. Freddie didn't get a hit. Teoscar didn't get a hit. In my scenario, first off, that scenario that I just broke down actually happened. Mm-hmm. Check out the World Series. Check out any other great game that the Dodgers have had. That's exactly what happens almost every single time. They'll end up walking Ohtani or walking Mookie, and whatever thought process goes, they'll throw it into a spot where Freddie can grab it, or they'll throw it into a spot where Teoscar can grab it. And I'm not just talking about the powerhouses. I said you got past Furious Four. What are you going to do when Muncy starts cooking? What are you going to do when Edmund starts cooking? What are you going to do when Kike Hernandez starts cooking? These are all players that, at the very least, are all good for the double or the triple, period, point blank. So when we're talking about player to player, they don't have all the powerhouses in one. So we're not talking about all the powerhouses in one either. They have the first. You can get past the first four, and yes, maybe you can get past that last five. But if we're talking about each player at their A game, not just getting hits, they don't have to constantly get hits. There's walks. You walk anybody on the Dodgers, I can guarantee you it's going to get dark for you, because it doesn't, at their A game, they're not missing. It doesn't have to be a homer. It doesn't have to be bat to ball. These players are better than the other players. I'm not saying that the Blue Jays have no chance. Once again, they've been showing exactly why they have a chance. But they don't have, if each team comes into this game tonight saying A-plus effort, the Dodgers win every single time. I don't see how there's no scenario where the Blue Jays are able to put up more runs.
See,
because of who's in the lineup. Even if, whoever you get on base, whoever you decide to walk, whoever you decide to let get that bunt so they can get to the next pitcher the next batter, whoever you do it to, the next batter has the exact chance of doing it to you, making you look like a fool.
Well, see, again, though, and I think we could go round and round on this, so it becomes irrelevant, I guess, eventually. But the difference, again, though, is you're talking about guys that, right, like, we're talking if pitchers pitched a game and where they're walking these guys. If you're getting where you're giving up one run, maybe, you know, here and there, you know, you give a home run up every inning. I would rather give up a home run every inning and then get my guys up and know I'm going to have a higher chance of getting in two or three runs in an inning than giving up one or maybe two home runs every inning or so, because the Blue Jays will line the bases and then they will make you pay. You can walk them, or you cannot. They're not going to hit a home run on you. Okay, cool. And then you're sitting there like, all right, pitcher's best bet, they have to pick them off on the bases. They're probably not even going to try to steal a base because they're just going to continue to get hits. And then that one player is going to come up and he's going to say, now it's my turn. And that's the difference. The Dodgers are going to be scary with every player. Every player that comes up, you're going to be like, man, like this could very well be that home run. Like, it's probably going to be a home run or it's going to be nothing. And that's what a pitcher would pitch to him once they know that that's how this game is going to go. Because then as the Blue Jays pitcher, you're like, all right, let me give up this home run. Let me give this one up here. Let me take this there. Because when my guys get out here, at this point, mind you, we're not worrying about stats. As a pitcher, you're not worrying about stats. You're like, you know what? Screw this. We're going all the way. So with that in mind, comes the realization as the pitcher, you're at this point, you're just looking at what you'd rather give up. Because, you know, you still got to get out. The innings have to happen. The game can't go on forever. In a perfect world, it's still going to go and it's going to end. So you bite your loss on a play here or a play there, and then you say, okay, now the inning's over. Let's see who we got. It may not happen every inning, but the chances are a lot higher that the Blue Jays are going to somehow manage to put some runs in through RBI that are going to keep up and match or outmatch what the Dodgers are going to do. If you're throwing a fastball down the middle and you're just like, you know what, he's going to knock it, let him have it, get him out. Boom, cool. I give up a home run. That's 1 point, right? Versus I walk him, I take a chance on him. Maybe he bunts or maybe he gets it in because the Dodgers, they got some speedy guys. They can steal a base. You don't take that chance. At that point, you're like, give it up. Let Shohei have his walk off. Let him have it. After that, next guy comes up. Maybe that first inning or two when you're trying to get through that first four, your furious four, you got to deal with that. But you ultimately give up that run. I mean, okay, all four of them get home runs. Okay, you're giving up four. Now the Blue Jays got to come back out, right? Maybe they load the bases up. Probably do. They hit a home run. They get a grand slam. Whatever it is. The only downside that and that would favor your point is that the Dodgers would have the consistency of scoring more often. But they're not going to score as much in an inning, I don't think, consistently as the Blue Jays would. In a perfect scenario, the Blue Jays are going to put up bigger innings, but probably not every inning. Whereas the Dodgers could put up a couple of runs every inning, but is that going to match when the Blue Jays are putting up 3 to 5 runs in an inning? I mean, they've already proven that once they get cooking in an inning, they don't slow down. It's hard to stop them, and that's my point. In a perfect situation, both teams are going to get it done offensively. The Dodgers will continue to score, but are they going to be able to match up when it comes down to who's going to load bases and turn more than just one run at a time? Maybe two. The Blue Jays, 2, 3, 4, 5 in an inning. That's my point. And I'm not saying that that means that they're going to win it all. It's just when you look at both teams are very good in different ways. And again, they had an 18-inning game, sir. So we're not really that crazy for talking what we're talking. Mind you, the scoring will never, in my opinion, are probably never going to go anything like this. Because at this point, like, imagine if that game was a perfect game and they just kept going back and forth. It could have been like 50 points. Like, you know, 20 to 25 each, like something like that. But the difference is you're going to get maybe every inning, you're getting 1, 2. The Blue Jays, every couple innings, maybe 2 or 3 innings each, they're getting 4, 5. So where's the balance going to be? Who's going to crack in the end?
Yep. I agree, sir. I'm not going to overly rant about this anymore, but let's be clear, it could definitely get dark for the
either team,
for either team, but it could definitely
I'm okay with this going to 7.
It could definitely get dark for the Blue Jays, and only way it gets dark for the Dodgers is if they do not keep their same pace.
Well, but, as the reigning champs it kind of is. It kind of should be that way. Like, for what it's worth, if it gets dark for the Dodgers, then they've made some mistakes, and the team that's trying to take that title from them would have capitalized on it. So it's really the Dodgers series to lose. And this ain't last year. This ain't Yankees 2.0. This is a much, much different team. And I never thought they were going to be the ones playing the Dodgers. So I love what I see. I can't wait to watch this game tonight. But yeah, I say we get into basketball, sir.
It definitely works for me, sir. I was actually just looking at the Rockets and Raptors game. Got a little, I think I took their spread, the Raptors spread at the 2-5. So hoping that the Raptors come in. I think they were at 5-5. Yeah. But hoping that the Raptors come through for me.
I love what I see right now when it comes to some of these teams.
It's so score oriented this season.
Oh yeah,
I love it.
The amount of overtimes in this early in the season, it's been amazing. I like my Pacers are not doing good, but you know, setting them
certain aside, players are though. You know,
hell yeah, they're just not winning games. They're 0-3 right now. But I mean, let's look at some of these teams, man. Like, you know, the Cavs are 3-1. The Bulls 3-0. I mean, the Nuggets are sitting at 2-1. I mean, the Jazz and the Trailblazers are doing all right. The Timberwolves and the Lakers are okay. The Grizzlies is in there. I mean, I the 76ers, man, like, they're going crazy. The Heat, the Miami Heat are doing good. The Warriors are doing good. The Thunder, you know, they're just on a tear. The Bucks.
You mentioned the 76ers. I needed to say something right there. A little quick interjection. Let's fire Joel Embiid.
Let's fire him.
He's not needed anymore. Yeah, he's not needed anymore. He's not. I don't like it. I don't like anything about Joel Embiid anymore. I didn't like him last season. If we're being honest, he's not a game changer out there anymore. He was. Yeah, he had a 25-point game last night. But the game before that, what did he do?
Wasn't good.
Not a factor. He was not a factor on the court anymore. He wasn't a factor last season because he missed all of those games. And then even when he did come to play, he did not play. Do you understand if I would have caught on to the fact that his over stayed at 30 points, regardless of whether he played? You could have took that over 9 times out of 10 and been correct every single time.
Well,
like, it wouldn't have made a difference. He's not changing anything, and I don't like it.
He's not the only key player, you know. Grimes put up 23.
He doesn't need to be.
Maxey put up 39. I mean, Edgecombe had 14. Oubre had 17. I mean,
they had the same team last season.
Yeah, it's not the Joel Embiid team. It's not about him, even though he may want it to be. This is a team that is doing well and continues to do well. I think more because they have a well-rounded team. I mean, this isn't a team that I expected to go 4-0, to be entirely honest. But, you know, hey, and Paul George, I mean, Paul George be doing his thing out here. I don't know. When I just look at this team, I look at a team that is doing a lot better. And I think even without Joel Embiid, if he wasn't out there, I think they'd still continue to be doing just fine. Maybe they wouldn't be 4-0 on the season, but I mean, I'm just saying, even with him, it took an overtime for them to beat the Wizards, who were not doing well coming into this game last night. So I'm not going to sit here and say that, like, Joel Embiid wouldn't be a bad loss for them. But, like, at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're going to suffer a lot without him.
Copy that. I don't want to long talk it.
No.
I don't want to down talk a player too harshly, but I just don't think he's a factor on the 76ers anymore. Maybe it's another team that he needs. Something like that.
But, yeah, that would be my thing. Like, if you put him somewhere else, some of these teams that are struggling, that they're needing to find that scorer for them, you know, he might would be a bigger asset. I mean, you know, the Clippers are 2-2. They could use a big scorer. The Kings are struggling still. They need to find somebody that would give. But some of these teams are just, they're just not breaking out yet. They're just, it's early. It's super early. We're just getting through this in first week. This is nothing. None of this is going to matter. The only teams that aren't surprising right now are the Thunder and the Warriors and the Bucks. Like, those are the only three teams that I look at and I'm like, all right. The rest of them, they're kind of a surprise. You know, Miami's 3-1. I would say they're not a surprise, but like, they are one of those teams that continue to surprise me, and they just always fail when it matters, you know? So 3-1 start for them. By the end of the season, they're going to be struggling to stay above 500. So, you know, we'll see how it all plays out, but some of these teams are not a surprise whatsoever. The Cavs at 3-1, you would expect that. It's the Cavs. You know, the Celtics 1-3, not a surprise anymore. Like, you know, they're not the same team that they were. The Nuggets, I mean, let's be clear, they are still a very competitive team. They took the Thunder all the way to 7 in the postseason last year. We're talking about a very good team. You know, there's nothing here that says to me like we're far enough into the season to really be surprised by much. But there are a few teams that are doing a little bit of something. Most of the other teams, it is where you'd expect them to be.
I personally love to see the NBA this year in all aspects. You know, last season, I don't think it was that score-oriented, except for on a few teams. Let's say fewer teams than what it is now. These are a lot of high-scoring games. These are a lot of fast-paced games. And these are the games that you want to see.
Absolutely. You know? They're finding their rhythm.
I think it's mainly because we're seeing a lot of retirements out of, like, the old regime. And I don't know about you. I hate to see that. But also, yes, ma'am. It gives us a new look into what the NBA is probably going to turn into. A lot of what it was before. I mean, when all of those new players came in, when LeBron and Carmelo and Dwayne, when they came in, it was high scoring as well. But, you know, slowly you decline, and then they still, you know, teams still focus on their star player like LeBron or D-Wade or Kobe or whatever. So it'll slow down by nature, not by, you know, not because anybody wants it to, but now it's speeding back up. So that's just my perspective on it. You know, that's not facts or anything. But I like to throw that out there.
The only thing that I think goes beyond that is also the style of play. This is not the same league anymore of, you know, we're trying to get into the rim. Honestly, this is not an inside the paint NBA anymore. This is a beyond the arc. We're making the three. I mean, you got big guys that would have never dreamed, you know, 10 years ago in the league. You would have never seen a big guy taking a three like that. You know, now everybody's shooting threes. It don't matter who you are and what position you play. You could be the center. You're still taking a three-pointer. Like, it used to be like, okay, desperation, you wide open. Yeah, maybe take the shot, you know. But now, it don't matter who you are. It ain't looking for that guy that you know can hit a three. No, this is everybody shoots threes. Everybody's got to get them. And if you're not taking those shots, you're probably going to lose. Because at the end of the day, this game is driven by the jump shot, not by the slam dunk and the layup. And yes, they get into the paint. It's still part of it. And it still can be a fun, beautiful thing to see. But I have seen too many games, and this was last year too, but definitely already this year, they'll be driving into the rim and then throw the ball to take a three-point shot. The risks that these guys are taking when it comes to points is a lot different than what it used to be. It's a much safer style of play, really, a lot less injuries than there used to be. But we don't see posterizing. The glass ain't breaking no more, sir, and it probably never will. Even the slam dunk contests have gotten to be very boring. We're not looking at the league where Shaquille O'Neal, Kevin Garnett, early age LeBron, Kobe. We're not looking at these guys that are, they're doing stuff that shouldn't even be possible in the middle of the air with their hands when they go and slam the ball in. We're not looking at that type of NBA no more. And I'm okay with that. But that's why you get these high-scoring games. You ain't having games going to like 80 points and that's a decent high-scoring game. Like 100 points is like an average now. Like 100 points used to be, like I remember watching 100-point games like 10 years ago. I don't know about you, but that stuff was like wild. Now if you're not getting 100 points, like are you even offensively doing okay? I don't know about you, but when I look at a lot of these games, I ain't seen a lot of games that are under 100. Last night, the only game that had it, imagine everybody scored at least 100 points except for one game. Then those two, it was 79-98. If you go back to Monday, only one team, I'm sorry, two teams, and both teams lost, put up under 100 points. Every day you go back, 100 points. The Sunday, not a single team put up under 100 points. It is the average now to put up a 100-point game. If you're not putting up 100 points, you're not doing it right. And that's because we're not driving to the rim all the time. Because when you do, you're going to go to the line. The penalty problem is too much for me. So now we're taking threes. We're taking deeper shots. We're taking the jump shot in favor of taking a high risk play and trying to get it in at the rim. Not saying it doesn't happen, but it generally happens, it seems like, off of turnovers. The turnover battle will lead to more attempts at the basket. So that is what I see. When you talk about high scoring games, that is why I feel like it's this way. This is why we're having overtime games. Players are specializing in jump shots now, every position. Every player needs to be capable of pulling up a game winner or a game tying buzzer beater that, again, even 5 years ago, you look at a guy like Stephen Curry and be like, hey, he can do it, but who else is going to – there ain't – not every single person is going to do it. You're going to get the ball to him. Now you're going to throw it to whoever is available and say, yeah, there's probably a solid chance he's going to hit this buzzer beater. It's basketball now.
Yeah, I get it, man. But we're going to move on because we're losing a little bit of time in this episode. And I really want to talk about my Dolphins playing Thursday night football against the Ravens.
Okay.
We just got us a nice little dub, and I think we're going to take another one over the Ravens, sir.
You know, both teams are, both teams are setting at a measly 2-win record. Miami's 2-6, Baltimore's 2-5, thanks to a bye week. I look at these two teams as very evenly matched. In many ways, except for the rush in which the Ravens do have a rather large edge. I do believe Lamar Jackson is going to be back, which is both good and bad. You got the return of Lamar after the injury. Is he going to be healthy and ready to go? But I'm just going to say this game could either be a really, 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 really good game, or it could be what I'm wondering that it will be, and that will be just an absolute snooze fest, especially if you're a Dolphins fan. The Ravens' potential will always be at this point, with the way both teams have played, much higher than the Dolphins. And that's only because, again, the Dolphins are struggling to find any sort of real rhythm. The running game is, you might as well call it a wrap. Their passing game is entirely dependent on Jalen Waddle getting open or drawing the defense so much to him that everyone else gets open. The Ravens have a mean defense. They're not the best in the league by any stretch. In fact, they're one of the worst. But then again, so is the Dolphins. So I will say it's going to boil down, I think, to Lamar coming back out and being healthy. If not, then I think we have ourselves a game. But as far as the Dolphins go, y'all have a very long injury list, and it's not looking good. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know that I believe the Dolphins are going to be able to keep up.
Well, I'll be honest with you, sir. I believe that we will be able to. I think we'll be able to make this a game. Even though Lamar will be back, we'll have a nice little edge over the Ravens, I believe. And also, I'm going to go ahead and say that, you know, it's not going to be a Waddle show. Of course, Waddle's going to do his absolute thing, because even though the Ravens have some of their players back, they don't have they're still down a few, which means defensively they're going to be on their heels regardless. I don't care what you say about my Dolphins. Their offense can cook.
They can.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters. And I think they'll be able to. They had a nice game last week. I have no reason to think that they won't have one this week. So, with that being said, you know, HN, we can go ahead and get him for a touchdown. And we can go ahead and put Derrick Henry for one, too, because that line will be able to stop. I mean, those backs will be able to stop either Andrews or Flowers, whoever they want to throw it to, maybe Bateman. But those backs will be able to stop them from at least catching those big runs.
D-Hop.
So, yep, D-Hop. They'll be able to stop. Maybe not D-Hop. D-Hop's
he's just, getting a touchdown.
He's weird. I'll give him the touchdown. But it's weird, though. You may not. Like, I'll let you have that. But D-Hop is so weird these days. I don't understand it. I can never call him for the touchdown. Not comfortably. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. But I can't.
Okay. Well, if I was going to pick a team to win, I'm going to pick the Ravens. And this isn't just based off of, like, the records, because clearly both teams have a terrible record right now. But if I'm going to pick a team, I'm going to take the team that has their quarterback that is more than capable of ripping off some big runs. He's going to be looking to find his main receiver threats, and he's got a few of them. I will give you, D-Hop's been weird this year, but, I mean, to be fair, he's not the number one. And D-Hop is a receiver who's not young anymore. Yes, he's more than capable of ripping off some big plays, but we're talking about a team that is getting older. They've got a good mix of veterans with some of these young guys, but they're getting older. Some of these guys are definitely aging out. So they're kind of in their twilight years, and they gotta take it easy sometimes. But you got Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, D-Hop. You know, Rashad Bateman might be good for something here and there, although he's, as the last several years of his career, have been really inconsistent and very useless at most points. And not saying that I could do better as a player, but I'm just saying I feel like they should draw up some better plays for him. I don't know. It's just, it is what it is. That defense is starting to get some of their guys back, and I think that's a problem for the Dolphins tomorrow night. I see Miami throwing some picks. I see Tua getting rattled. I see him probably getting hit a couple of times, and I don't know. I think they could keep up early, but I think that the Ravens are just going to get a head of steam, and they're going to come for this win tonight. Or, I'm sorry, again, tomorrow.
I can't completely argue, because, of course, they my Dolphins have been pretty disappointing as of late, but I will protest that my Dolphins can definitely take this. So with that being said, Dolphins covering the spread.
Well, I don't think the question, should the Dolphins be worried, is even relevant at this point. Because we know that their season is probably a wrap. There, you one or two more losses and it's pretty much over. I mean, in that division alone, it's pretty much over. But, you know, I think they should be worried about next year at this point. The Dolphins should. And finding what they need to find to really get that weapon that they need to push it over the edge. And unfortunately, the college class coming in this year is not going to be quarterback friendly in many ways. So I think it's going to be something where they're going to have to find themselves a good receiver or a good running back. Something that can happen that will get them something. Because right now, man, offensively, they are just hit or miss way, way too much.
I can agree. Well, I don't know about you, sir, but that's all I got for the night.
Yep, I think so.
You guys, we also wanted to bring you a partnership opportunity that me and Benjamin have just came into, where, you know, we will be giving out a promo code. It is Beyond for Morning Recovery. Morning Recovery is a energy shot drink that pretty much replenishes you for, sorry, you all. I've been drinking a little bit of Hennessy, and I'm going to have to drink me one myself, because it is an alcohol recovery drink, and it pretty much keeps you up for the morning. If you ever feel like you have a hangover or you feel a little bit drowsy, Morning Recovery is your perfect choice to get up and get going.
Absolutely. I don't know about you, but as I've gotten older, I find the adult beverage to be, while pleasing in the moment, and the next morning, sometimes if I've had more than one or two, it's not as friendly to me in my somewhat older years. And I think stuff like this, which has slowly over the last probably 5 or 6 years become more and more popular, I think we find that it's very useful to have things that we can produce and talk about to our fans that probably mean something. I know a lot of sports people, or a lot of my friends, I should say, that are sports enthusiasts. It's common. The beer in the game, you know, you get together for Sunday night football and you throw a few back, you eat some greasy junk food, and you just have a blast, and then you lose track, and suddenly 3, 4, 5, 6 drinks, whatever it is, they just keep rolling. And the next morning you wake up on a Monday morning for work and you're like, ugh. You don't want to go, but you need something to kind of help out, make you feel a little better with a little bit of energy, a little pep in your step, something that you probably wouldn't have otherwise. More Labs has, we've discovered that this is a partnership that we can really talk about. They have something. They have a thing, you know. They have a way to say, hey, let's make this a better morning. Let's make Monday mornings great again. So I'm all for it, sir. And you know what? I don't even at this point, you know, Morning Recovery, it doesn't even matter to me when I think about like the brand per se. Like I just want to feel better on Monday mornings, especially after, if it's coming in after a loss, which as a Green Bay fan is not too much this year. So I'm grateful for that. But regardless, as a Miami fan, I know it's something you'll need for Friday morning, sir, this week. So I, by all means, encourage you to utilize something that will give you a little pep in your step when we get ready to go in and record our next episode of Numbers and Beyond. So, everybody, that code to get your discount is going to be Beyond, because everything a step beyond. And on that note, that's all I've got. You got anything else, sir?
You guys, over the over the next few episodes, we will be bringing you ads like this for these great products. We've received a lot of partnerships over the last few episodes. That's the big news that I was talking to you about in the last one. We are going to be bringing you great products like this. And as always, you can type in that code BEYOND, and we have several different great discounts for morning recovery. I believe you get a 25% discount. I already got my order in. I know Ben has his in.
Yes, sir.
I definitely use the code. It already works. You guys can go in. It'll be on our page. It'll also be inside of the link of this episode. Please go use it, because I believe that it will work numbers for you. All right. On that note, Ben, I'm done. You don't have anything else?
No, I do not.
Peace, you all.